Today we're going to have a work session on House Bill 2650 as amended. Do you want to read our small amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2650A is a bill the committee heard on the 26th of April. It deals with nutrition criteria for food and beverages sold in schools. The committee has before them the -A16 amendment, which allows snacks sold in schools to contain up to 0.5 grams of trans fat per serving.
Only one? How about if we move three amendments?
No,
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Are we in work session?
Yeah.
I move the A16 amendments to House Bill 2650.
Okay. Senator Montes Anderson moves the A16 amendments to House Bill 2650. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, I just would like to just make a comment that this bill is important in that it is time that schools make a statement about what they support as far as the nutrition of students in schools. We teach health classes. We have other related courses that imply good health. So we have to be consistent in what we do, and this bill helps that consistency.
Mary Lou, would you come up, please? And I just want you to go over the implementation of the bill.
Mary Lou Henrich from Community Health Partnership. The implementation is that in the 2008 school year, all of the snack items that are prepackaged and the beverages must meet the standards that are outlined in the bill. Mm-hmm. In the 2009 school year, the items that are served on the a la carte line that are made on site or in the school district where the kitchen and then brought to the site that are kind of homemade, those at that time in the 2009 school year, they will need to comply with the standards.
Okay.
And we have offered to work with, our organization has offered to work with the Department of Education school nutrition programs, child nutrition programs, to help any district that needs assistance in calculating or in understanding which foods fit the bill and which don't.
The reason I wanted you to go over that is because I think it's important that people understand that there is some flexibility in the implementation date.
Yes.
And that there is time to adjust. And
that was what we worked hard on in the House side, was to recognize that, especially for things that were being made, prepared by school nutrition staff, that they had time to really adjust their recipes, figure out which things met the requirements, which ones didn't, and then how to adapt them, either make them smaller, use lower-fat cheese, do what it took to get things to meet. And so that's why the 2009 implementation for that part of the bill.
Okay.
Question?
Yes.
What about the groups that do fundraisers? And they, you know, how they sell the candy bars. They go and sell the candy bars, and they also have the booster clubs sell them at games and that. That, could you?
The bill really only covers during the school day and for activities that are aimed at when it's students after school, that is still covered. But things offside the school grounds, so if it's a candy sale that's, you know, kids are selling door-to-door or however they're doing it, that would not be covered under this bill. If, however, it was the cheerleading squad that was going to sell donuts on the school premises during the school day and hours, that would not be allowed. The booster clubs, things that are done at games or at when there's, the band has a recital or those kinds of things where the audience is not just the students, but it's adults also, the bill does not apply.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can you show me in the bill where it's specific that does not apply?
Bring my
it is
in there.
Yeah.
It says You would think I could quote chapter and verse at this point, but I'm sorry.
Well, the standards required by this section do not apply to food and beverages items sold in the school as part of... No, that's
no.
The other program. That's the... Oh, I was going to ask about that program. I wanted to ask about that. It does not apply to the Department of Agriculture lunch or breakfast programs. It's right above that. The standards required, that's on page 3, I believe, at the beginning of the page.
It is at the top of the page.
Yeah, and it goes into that paragraph, lines 1 through 5, talk about sporting events and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I did mean to ask about the Department of Agriculture breakfast and lunch programs.
The school meals programs, Senator Morissette, anything that's sold as part of the USDA school meals program is not covered by this bill. They have their own federal standards they have to meet.
And their federal standards are... less or more strict?
They're different. I think it's hard to say, you know, unequivocally they're more or less, because it's talking about a meal plan over a week. It's talking about the whole meal.
Okay.
They're just, it's not the same as a standard for a snack food or a single entree.
Now, there is flexibility in this bill for school districts because they can do stricter standards than this bill requires. So, that's just to be sure that there is some...
Yes, Senator Morissette, they can do stricter standards.
They can do stricter standards.
Yes. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
To clarify this, since nobody seems to find it, if 14 and 15 would solve the problem. Did the A-15 and the A-14?
I'm sorry, what problem were we talking about?
The question of the USDA standards and the question about what foods could be sold for fundraisers and that sort of thing.
Well, any food can be sold for fundraisers during the school day as long as it's not eaten during the school day. If kids want to come and bring candy bars and say, okay, we're going to go out in the neighborhood and sell these, I mean, food is not going to be allowed and distributed during the school day. Candy.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm just smiling, thinking I'd love to see you try to stop me.
Well, no. Okay. What goes on now?
I've had this candy bar, and I just temptation is too great.
No. Okay. There's nothing to preclude people from bringing things from home, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So that's
yes.
Fine. And there's nothing to prevent people from leaving campus either.
Right.
In high
Correct.
School. They can go out and eat lunch or go across the street and to the donut shop and eat donuts. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
This is for the kids who are on the school grounds, who choose to stay or who have to stay. And I guess my first read of the amendment to allow food for fundraisers was that if they had fundraisers at a different time of the school day in the evening, or if they were taking their fundraiser product out of the school and selling it in the neighborhood, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just as I tried to explain, we had a situation in a school where the school district policy in that particular school district already said that they were limiting these kinds of fundraisers, and someone from the school nutrition program walked into that middle school, and the cheerleaders were having a sale of a certain brand of donut, and they were selling them 50 cents a piece or three for a dollar. So, three for a dollar or 50 cents a piece. And so that was during school hours,
mm-hmm.
and it was like right about lunchtime, and that would not be allowed by our rules here. But if those fundraisers were being held off the school grounds and they were walking around selling donuts to themselves or other people, that would be okay. I think what we're trying to do is what Senator Verger said, which is have consistency among the message that we're telling kids about what's healthy to eat and not, and then only sell those things that are during the school hours when it's the kids who are there.
Yeah.
Although when I read the bill, it says on page 2 or 3 at the top, the standards required by this section do not apply to food and beverage items sold in a school at times when the school is being used for school-related events or non-school-related events for which parents and other adults are a significant part.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
That's so if parents were there during school hours, that could happen if they were there.
Yes, if it was for a school-related event which parents were invited, you know, part of the audience.
Well,
yes, we're trying to be reasonable, I think, is what we're saying in the bill.
And school-related events are basketball games, plays, various events where the community comes in and participates in the auditorium and so on, and then that would be allowed, but
usually
not during your academic school.
Yes, that's exactly correct.
Okay, thank you very much. Any objection to dash, what's the dash?
16.
Is any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2650A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Montes Anderson moves House Bill 2650A to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Would you call the... Excuse me. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't be able to vote for this. Not that I'm opposed to what they're attempting to do here. With the A14s, I think I would have been very satisfied. But, the A14s were basically proposed by folks on the ground who are running these things. They wanted something that was more... That had more clarity, and I think tying this to Department of Ag National School Lunch Program and School Breakfast Program standards will get us there. And I find it interesting that we are now going to provide assistance for schools to be able to understand this incredibly complicated thing we're hoisting on them, and it's just the wrong way to go. It's unfortunate. We could have had a good bill.
Other comments? Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Montes Anderson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator George?
No.
Vice Chair Drew?
No.
Chair
Hatfield? Aye. House Bill 2658 passes to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation, and Senator Berger and I will carry the bill. Next bill, we're going to have a work session on House Bill 2687. Would you read the... Oh, we don't have an amendment. Would you come up and explain why we don't have an amendment? No, wait a minute. I don't want to get into this. Is very brief invite a testimony in a work session where this is not a public hearing. So just very briefly tell us why you don't want an amendment to this bill.
Absolutely. Good day, Chairman and esteemed committee. Marcus Bergwind, Oregon Association of Marriage and Family Therapy, and in consulting with our attorney for the National Organization of Marriage and Family Therapists, he did not recommend the amendments as proposed, and we had our reasons as well. His main concern were 2 points. Do you have the amendments that were proposed last week before you? The one that tries to insert group health policy does not jibe with the vendorship bill as it stands for social workers and psychologists, which is part of the whole spirit of this bill, is to gain equal footing with qualified mental health providers. If you look at the social work vendorship law, it says covering individual, group health, and blanket policies. And for psychologists, it says individual and group health policies. So it kind of defeats the purpose of the bill to restrict us and not restrict our fellow mental health providers. The other piece that he was concerned about was the inclusion of behavioral health care, which seems innocent on the surface, but he said that has never been defined in insurance code law of Oregon. And even if it had, to me it's redundant because there are two features of our bill that would preclude that being an issue. That one being that we're not supposed to be working outside of our scope of practice as dictated by mental health parity law as well as by our bill. And then the bill calls for insurance companies to only pay licensed professional counselors or licensed marriage and family therapists if they're providing a service that is a benefit that is covered by that insurance company already. We're not asking for an increase in services. So there's no need to have an amended language because already we can only do what's within our scope of practice and what is dictated by the insurance companies themselves.
Any questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. I guess, Mr. Chair, when we're looking at the section of lobbying referenced here, it is talking about group. I mean, that's Senate Bill 1. This isn't necessarily going outside of that. So I'm willing to move it. My opinion, and I'm not a lawyer, I thought the amendment made more clarity in intent. But having said that, we're in work session. Any more discussion or okay. Do you want a motion?
I think that's, unless you have more questions.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2687A and Gross to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2687A engrossed to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please call the roll.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator
Dorsch?
Aye.
Senator
Monahan?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Cruz? Aye.
Aye. You want to try that again?
He's very quiet.
Okay.
It is not House Bill 2687A passes this committee and is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you, thank you. We'll open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3067A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3067A requires the Department of Human Services to use the most current population data available from the Oregon University System Primary Population Research Center when using a formula to allocate monies to counties for mental health and addiction services, declares an emergency, takes effect upon passage.
Okay, if you want to introduce yourself, please.
Chair Morissette and members of the committee, I'm Erica Hagedorn here today representing Deschutes County. I have Scott Johnson with me here today. He's head of the Deschutes County Mental Health Division, and he'll give you the technical aspects of the bill, but this is a very simple bill that passed unanimously out of both the House Health and Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee unanimously and the House floor 58-20. It very simply asks the Mental Health and Addiction Services Office, of which Bob Nickel runs, when they apply this formula that the community mental health directors created in 2002-2003, that they agreed upon to allocate A&D and mental health funds through this formula, they use population as one piece of that formula. So this bill simply asks them to use the most accurate population data we have available, which is from the PSU Population Research Center. So I'll let Scott talk more about it, and we can answer any questions afterwards.
Senator Morissette, yes. Members of the committee, my name is Scott Johnson. I'm with the Deschutes County Mental Health Department. I'm the director there, also a member of the State Hospital Community Services Work Group. As Eric has indicated, the importance of looking at population data is felt very acutely in Deschutes County and several other counties in particular. Our county has grown by 37,000 people since the census was done in 2000, and we're very supportive of the formula, as are all the mental health directors, and we simply ask that the most current data be used on an annual basis. It's certified by Portland State University. The most recent data now is 2006. Our population grew close to 8% in that time period. So we're very supportive. When we testify before the House committee, a number of other parties, including NAMI of Central Oregon, Crook County, Washington County, our Public Safety Council, Best Care Treatment Services spoke in support. So we're here simply to answer any other questions you may have. Representative Wisnett.
How accurate are the Portland State figures, annual figures, do you think?
Senator Morissette, members of the committee, It is accurate to say that we're always very interested in any new calculations, and often the calculations done by Deschutes County are in excess of the Portland State University figures. Frankly, it seemed to be our best available source that publishes data on an annual basis. I think, truth be told, our planning department would tell you that the figures they're using for Deschutes County are too low, but again, they publish them annually, they certify them annually. It's the best available source we have.
Well, as former mayors, I think we probably share that feeling, that the figures are always a little bit lower than we would estimate them at. Yes. Senator Berger.
So the formula is just based on population. Is that what you're telling me?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, no, that is not in fact the case. The formulas that are used for mental health and addictions funding are based on a number of factors that get at prevalence. They look at scientific indicators of the prevalence of something like mental illness or addiction at a community level. Population is a key part of the formula in assessing need, but there's a number of other factors, including urbanicity, higher incidence in a more urban environment, poverty is another. There's also a factor into the formula that assures the smallest counties receive a base level of support so that they can operate as well. There's a number of factors, population being one of them.
Follow up?
Yes.
So the Portland State figures give you all of this. They put all of that into the formula?
Chair Morissette, Senator Berger, no, this bill is solely asking that when the formula is applied, that it be done annually, and the population element in the formula be used from Portland State University. There would be other sources of data that would go into looking at poverty and other factors as well.
I have another question, yes. Mr. Chairman. And what percentage of the formula is based on population?
You know, I don't have that handy on me. It's quite possible that Gina Furman with the Association of Counties or Mike Morris, who is here on behalf of Department of Human Services, could answer that question for you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we'll call them up in a minute. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Gene Wisnett, House District 53, and thank you for hearing this bill. It is very important to our community because of the population explosions we've having in Deschutes County. And I think my friend Scott Johnson has done a good job. It's not just population, there's other factors, and every county does get a minimum amount. Mm-hmm. But I tell people it's, you know, all we're asking is use real data, correct data, to distribute the money. And we've worked real hard with DHS, Mr. Nickel and his staff, to get this done right. Passed through the House pretty easy, through committee and on the floor. We'd definitely support and ask for your support of this bill.
Do you have a question?
Well, yeah. Why should I support yours when you didn't pass mine out earlier?
Thank Mr. Chair and my friend Senator Cruz. I was ready to vote on that. You know I was.
Okay.
But I had all these nurses. We're looking at
a question.
Yes.
Thank you. As you know, if the formula changes and more money goes to Ben, that means less money goes somewhere else. And in the formula, does this take into account the prevalence of mental health, the prevalence of mental illness and addiction services?
Mr. Chair, Senator Montes-Anderson, yes, it does, in the sense that it's a scientifically based formula that looks at what kinds of measures are associated with a higher level of mental illness. And that's back to mentioning urbanicity, poverty. Those are things that have a correlation to, not necessarily cause and effect,
there's a direct correlation between those factors and the amount of mental illness at a community level. Those are included in the formula.
For any of you, pardon, let me try it again. The Kessler formula, do you guys believe that that's transparent enough that once you know what the population numbers are and they get ready to put the other factors in to do the calculation, that that's transparent enough that, that I see heads nodding.
Yes.
I'll let you answer.
Chair Morissette, Senator George, yes, in fact, that was the intent when all the mental health directors in the division got together to try to do this, is that it could be transparent and there wouldn't be any questions. It's simply a matter of doing the mathematics to help us determine need at each community level.
Yes.
Yes, I think the thing that bothers me is that I would say that just looking at Deschutes County, that your population is growing, but it's not, your poverty is not growing. In other words, you're drawing an awful lot of affluent people in that part of the world. So how does that balance out in the formula?
That's sure. They're crazy for moving there.
Chair and Senator Berger, you've been to visit us, and you see the top crust. But Deschutes County, we have a real poverty issue. The last homeless count that I was involved with, we had about 500. I think that's about doubled now. You have a lot of people coming to the area looking for jobs. We don't have high-paying jobs. We have a lot of service-paying jobs, minimum wage. People at Sun River, where my wife works part-time, most of them are minimum wage jobs. So we do have poverty. We do have homeless. And we do have a high mental health and alcohol and abuse program. All we're asking for this bill is just use correct data, use up-to-date data. And it's we're not asking for anything special, just use correct, updated information. And as Mr. Johnson's explained to you, the other data is still used. It's not just the population data.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. Gina Furman Nickel, would you please come up? And Mr. Morris, would you come up as well? Michael? Okay, you can, Gina, help us on the distribution.
Sure. Chair Morissette, committee members, for the record, my name is Dr. Gina Nickel. I'm the association director for the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. One of the things I'd like to put on the record is we've had this argument over and over and over for about 25, 30 years at the association level of what formulas to use and what to apply. And so we didn't choose the Kessler formula lightly. What I really need to say is that there are a lot of different service elements within mental health and addictions. And there are a lot of different formulas used. So this is not talking about the breadth of funding. The Kessler formula has just a slight poverty prevalence urbanicity into it, so about 80% or so is population-based. Really, all we're asking, and we get arguments on both sides. Senator Mona Sanderson had a question, is does this cause redistribution? One of the conversations that I've had with Bob Nickel is no, that's not the intent that he wants to do with this bill, and I'll let Mike Morris speak to that. But I think it's very important. It makes no sense when counties grow and grow and grow, and we're using the population part of the formula at 1990, and then we update it in 2000, and then we wait till 2010. If Portland State has the data, let's use it. And correct it every year, just whatever the current population is. The poverty, the prevalence, urbanicity, those are gotten to by a different formula. So, okay. Any more clarifying questions?
Any clarifying questions? Okay, thank you. Michael.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, my name is Mike Morris, and I'm the Certification Quality Improvement Manager at the Department of Human Services Addiction and Mental Health Division. And I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 3067A, and essentially just to say that we have been working with the the community mental health programs for a number of years to work on the best way to look at funding and when we receive funding, how to allocate that funding to address disparities, especially in those counties that have experienced rapid growth. And so we do have some agreements around mental health and agreements around addiction services funding regarding how we would address the new funding, any new funding we would receive, and we would essentially take the formula and apply the formula to address any, as we like to call it, the valleys in the funding, and to bring those programs up to some form of or close to equity with the other counties. So it would look at the funding that we received in this budget and look at any of those new additional funds and distribute those using the formula. And then if anything were by chance to come up during the biennium where there were new funds available, we would again use the latest population data and apply that to the formula and then use that formula to address the funding allocations.
I take a look at Multnomah County, where the core city of Portland is losing population, and then there are my area out in Gresham and Troutdale and Wood Village, and we're growing. And so I don't know how it's set up in the county, but I guess that's up to each county to determine how to distribute their money. But how do we, when the demographics change within a county, there's nothing in statute to change that, right? The mental health authority, whoever is in, controls that in each county, then can keep things the same way they are with most of the core services in downtown Portland and sort of leave us out in hinterland out of the loop. I know that doesn't really directly pertinent to this, but since we're talking about populations and I have an issue with mental health services in my part of the county.
Chair Morissette, Senator Monis Anderson, what you just brought up is exactly one of the county's and the association's responsibilities. When you see something like that happening, each director is accountable in their counties for what is happening. So if we start to see that trend, that county gets together with its private providers and starts to shift the way that services are provided. So if you see a problem, please bring it to our attention, and we'll get the directors together right away and the community members that do the services and change what we need to be doing. But as of right now, I have to tell you that Carl Bremner, the director from Multnomah County, he's been there a year. He's phenomenal and would be glad to meet with you maybe July 1st or something like that.
Yes, please. No, not even in July. Let's just give me a vacation.
The other option would be to turn it over to Metro and let them take
it. Senator Morris, we will address that at a later time.
Okay. I just had to throw that.
I know you did.
Senator Verger.
I represent counties that have had no growth. So you tell me that 80% of the formula is going to be population. So what I see in that formula is if you get the latest data and 80% is going to be based on that, then my counties are not going to fare very well. And so it's going to be not the number of mentally ill that are being serviced, but the number of people that have grown. For instance, if my county has some economic opportunities and doubles in population in the next 10 years, it doesn't mean that I have more mentally ill that need treatment. It just means that I have more people that have found jobs. So I'm having difficulty if you'll address that.
Yes. Chair Morissette and Senator Verger, we looked at a variety of scenarios when we looked at the Kessler formula, and we used and compared it with a variety of other formulas, and everybody agreed that really the Kessler seemed to be the most consistent in all those various scenarios as far as some of the counties that have small populations but maybe, you know, higher poverty. And we've looked at those and still have arrived at the formulas we're using and an agreement on those.
Senator Morissette, Senator Verger, I think your question is a really good one. I want to remind you that this formula only applies to a few of the service elements, that actually addressing what you're talking about, their special projects monies, their service elements to help with the areas that are most poverty-stricken, that the population base wouldn't hit. So that's service element 37. I won't go all over them, but we do have a way of dealing with that.
Yes. Senator Cruz.
I'm just curious as to how Portland State is able to be accurate on their population numbers outside of an actual census.
That's what we're all wondering. Who wants to answer that?
Senator Morissette, Senator Cruz, Portland State University is the university of choice right now that has the contract to do that. In later years, it might be a different university. They're as good as their researchers, so they do estimate.
That, as I mentioned earlier, was, you know, as former mayors, and we went through this every year, Lane County and so on, and I think everyone questions the numbers and always feel that they have more people than is reflected in their mini census and so on, but I don't know. I agree it's better to try to do it on a yearly scale than it is to wait for the census every 10 years, so we just have to try to pick the right place, and
they have economists,
they do a good job.
Estimators, mm-hmm. etc. Yeah. They do the best that they can.
And I'm not saying they're not doing a good job. I'm saying is that we, the recipients, always feel that they're being shortchanged, you know, because we know we have more people than they're counting, for goodness sake. So,
well, Mr. Chair, that's we have debates over the census, which is an actual headcount, and now we're allowing economists and. I'm an econ major, so I know how unreliable those people are. That was a joke, by the way.
Yeah. Now, what was that category that you complained about when we were in the healthcare reform committee? Mm. What was that group?
Oh, those were actuaries.
Actuaries. Yeah.
I don't have a lot of use for them. but that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
You know, I see a horrendous amount of growth in our schools, our Hispanic population particularly, and I don't know if they're documented or undocumented, but they are at least in our school systems, so I would love to maybe have Portland State University come and say, how do you really estimate the population, and does it include the migration that appears to be happening into Oregon of a very diverse group of people.
Okay.
Who are using the services.
So you want to I'm sorry.
I'm just going to say, this is a good bill, guys. Let's not confuse
it. Okay. I was going to say, this is only the census.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, good.
Mr. Chairman,
very much. Yes.
If I were Portland State, I could tell you exactly how I could make those estimates. If you gave me that data and I could compare them with last census, yeah. I guarantee you I could get you real close. Me, a farmer. Okay, so I think this is a good idea.
That's because you count filberts all the time.
Right. We don't nuts when we see them.
Okay. We're going to close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 3067A.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move 3067A to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz enthusiastically moves House Bill 3067A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Montanaro?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
I don't know.
Plus your $5,000.
I'm going to vote yes at this point in time. Then I'll let it go at that.
Okay.
Chair
Morissette? Aye. Would you like to carry the bill?
No.
Senator George, would you like to carry the bill?
I'm the only one who's enthusiastic. I'm probably a...
Well, that's one of my concerns.
Good, okay. Senator George,
I'm
carrying the bill.
I'm of fairness.
Whenever Senator George is enthusiastic, I get worried. So
okay. Close the public. Well, we close the public hearing. Open a public hearing work session, possibly on House Bill 3089. Would you do the bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3089A permits a person who has completed a doctoral program in Oriental Medicine from a federally recognized accredited school to use the designation of Doctor of Acupuncture in Oriental Medicine as part of the person's practice.
Thank you very much. Dr. Kafoury, would you come up, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Stephen Kafoury. Actually, I do have a Juris Doctor.
I knew that.
Well, you can call me doctor if you'd like. That's fine. Thank you.
You've been dealing with us for a long time, right. So go ahead.
I didn't know that. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm here today representing the Oregon Acupuncture Association, and after the hard bills that you've got, I'll bring an easy one. All we're asking for acupuncturists is the same thing that other professions have, to allow to use the academic degree which they received. There's a statute in the Medical Practices Act. It was originally put in because people back in the old days, charlatans, 100 years ago, were telling people they were doctors, and they had a medicine wagon selling patent medicine and stuff. And so they passed a law saying you can't say you're a doctor unless you are one. And since that was back when the only doctors there were really were medical doctors. And since that time, there have been a lot of other professions that have got doctor's degrees. And so there's a succession of, if you look in the statutes, of different people that are allowed now, different medical professions, allowed to use the title doctor if they have a legitimate degree of doctor. We have a school not too far from Senator Mona Sanderson's district, the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine, which this last year has been authorized to grant the degree of acupuncture in Oriental Medicine. There are only a couple of such degrees authorized in the United States. And we checked with Legislative Council to get the right wording so that this would be only people who have these degrees and the term of art there is federally recognized. We talked to the Oregon Office of Degree Authorization, made sure that they were okay with the bill. We talked to the Board of Medical Examiners to make sure they were the bill. We had a hearing in the House of Representatives, and nobody opposed it. Everybody's fine with it. It should be an easy yes vote for you.
Okay. Senator Cruz.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a concern, and it's probably just language, but it says a person who has completed a program that leads to a doctoral degree, why not having received their doctoral, then we can call them doctor. I mean, you know, you've completed a program that leads to.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I wish I got to draft the bills, but they don't let me. It's the office down there that does all the drafting.
I understand that, but that...
And that's the standard language.
Okay.
But it says
completed.
Yeah.
Completed a program that leads to a doctoral degree. Yeah. Okay. If you have completed a program that leads to a law degree, that could be undergrad because completing that program leads to a law degree.
I hear what you're saying.
And it may just be the language, but. Can I do a follow up?
Yes, that's good. I was going to say when you came up there. There's no such thing as a simple bill.
I know.
Well, we will complicate it.
We've got an hour left.
Oh, no.
Okay, this is slightly off subject, but not entirely. I had a lady in my office last week who is a doctor who has gone on to get a degree in acupuncture. You know who I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Okay. Some of the things, and of course she was talking about doctors who are moving into that profession, and there is this kind of quickie thing they can do, kind of a DVD sort of thing, and get a certificate or whatever. We're talking about the hands-on with the hours of clinical and the full boat in this. Would that be correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, that's exactly correct.
Okay. Okay, because what she was saying made sense in a different context, but I just wanted to make sure that we are talking about the actual, what, 2,500 hours of clinical, you know, because watching a DVD doesn't really tell me how I'm going to stick needles in people. You know what I mean, so, okay.
Now, do you have a scope of practice conflict with the reflexologist?
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't touch that one.
Apparently you don't. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. We will close public hearing and open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3089A engrossed to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3089 engrossed to the floor. Moves it to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Senator
Montanison?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator
George?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Morrison?
Aye. House Bill 3089 engrossed passes this body to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Would you like to carry the bill?
I think you should.
Oh, okay. I haven't carried it.
Okay. And Mr. Chair.
No, he's most enthusiastic.
Oh, was I enthusiastic here?
No, not this time.
As long as I can get here.
No, you already used up your quota of enthusiasm on the last bill.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
I will carry the bill. Yes.
Serve notice of potential minority report on House Bill 2650.
We are here. Very good.